Hello, welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebray and Anna Singh. Join us on our writing journey. Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Diving Into Writing. It's a bit of a different episode today because we want to talk a little bit about a play that both Anna and I have seen at the Crucible Theatre in Sheffield, and it's called Standing at Sky's Edge, and it's a very Sheffield based play, so it probably won't travel wider, but if you don't like spoilers, I'm afraid there'll be quite a few in this episode. So take it as warning, because it would be quite difficult not to talk about some of the things that happen. Okay, so it's a musical, and it's about a place called Sky's Edge, used to be Sky's Edge, in Sheffield, and it's about three different families in three different eras and what happens. The music is by Richard Hawley, who many people will have heard of because he's a famous musician from Sheffield, singer-songwriter. And the book is by Chris Bush, who also put the amazing play together and managed to weave through all these different stories. And I went to see it with my husband, and when we came out, we were talking about how cleverly the storylines came together and how well they were weaved together, as well as the actual physical moving around the props.
Yes.
What did you think of it, Anna?
Well, I agreed. I mean, I loved it. And I think a lot of people were talking about the fact that some of the action had all three eras taking place in almost the same room, which was so clever. So that you got to know three pairs of characters, so the 60s, the 80s, and now. And at some point, you could see those characters occupying the same space. So it's very interesting. And the music and the quality of the singing was absolutely fantastic. And the quality of the acting. An amazingly large cast as well.
I thought what was really relevant, though, was the way that... So you had two deaths within quite quickly, quite close together, didn't you? Mm. And it was kind of brought to a dramatic conclusion together.
Mm.
But it was the contrast between those two deaths, yes, that I thought was really interesting.
Mm.
Like one of them was completely random.
Yeah.
Whereas the other was kind of self-indulgent, yes, and basically an overdose of alcohol.
Yeah, so it wasn't so surprising. It built up to it, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But the other one was completely unexpected.
Yeah. But I think the two together kind of had more power somehow.
Yeah.
And I think it was the difference in them.
Mm. So the characters, there was a lot of counterpoint in the characters as well.
Mm.
Like with that one, there's the girl who comes to Sheffield as an outsider and doesn't know anything and can't understand the accent. And she meets Jimmy straight away.
Yeah.
And she's very intrigued by how to say Jimmy.
Yeah.
And he's a local lad. And so straight away there's that sort of feeling of difference between that pair of characters.
But how clever was it, the way that she had a conversation with him at the beginning, and she had a different conversation. He said the same things, but as a ghost, because he died at the end, but the meaning was so different.
Yes.
And I just thought that was so clever.
It was. There were loads of things that were very clever like that.
Yeah. So, written by Chris Bush.
Yes.
Who was a woman.
Yes. Another thing that was good was that I thought the relationship between what you at the first may have assumed was going to be a man. So with the contemporary one, it was a professional woman looking very much like a professional woman, heading up a new team, all the rest of it, moving into her new flat and upset and sort of heartbroken because of a lost love called Nikki. But then some of us may have assumed Nikki was a man. So it was clever, wasn't it? Because they're deliberately a name, like Chris, actually, where it can be either.
Yeah.
And so it turns out it's a woman, which was a woman with a belting voice, wasn't she? Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, the other one, the 60s story, that was clever as well, because it set you up to believe that their story, their issue, was going to be about the fact that she couldn't conceive.
Mm.
And that wasn't it wasn't the story, it wasn't the issue, but just really cleverly done.
It was. It was brilliant. Oh, I do recommend it if it ever does go away from Sheffield to other places. There are a few in-jokes, but maybe they would change those, as we talked about.
Well, I checked, and the writer is from Sheffield, but again... that was really obvious because she knew intimately. You could tell that she knew the culture of Sheffield intimately.
Yeah.
And you can't write about somewhere in that way unless you do know it, unless you've lived it.
Well, I agree, but I think you could enjoy watching it because there are blocks of flats like this, 60s blocks of flats in loads of places, but notably London, with very similar histories. Whether some of them have been done up like this, because that's what creates the level of the three-generation story. There are not so many, I don't suppose, that have been had this sort of interesting journey in themselves as a building, from being a great place to live to start with, then a not good place to live, and then back to being maybe even a bit snobbish, as the Sheffield perception of it is, of... just posh people going there. I won't say the other word that was said about the posh people. I think it is pretty special. But on the other hand, I think people would understand that sequence of events. But it's brilliant. I mean, it sweeps through so much. The miners' strike, you know, and steel workers.
But it wasn't done in any clichéd way, was it?
No.
And when you talk about setting as character.
Yeah.
It definitely had that, didn't it?
It definitely did. And I think, because we're going to talk about character today, it's quite a good lead-in, because things like the professional woman and her relationship with her parents and her relationship with her lost love and with her new colleague friend, this was very... cleverly done in a short time, wasn't it? It was set up that you really felt you knew her and her issues very quickly.
But you got some of it wrong.
Yeah.
The writer deliberately misled you, I think, or allowed you to mislead yourself.
Yes, that was it. She was clever at doing that. And some of it was stereotypes and some of it wasn't. The stereotype was the moving in with virtually nothing except white wine. Did you notice?
Oh,
three
God,
bottles
yeah.
she got out of the box.
Yeah.
And put in the fridge, and that was all.
I thought she put some red wine in the fridge as well, which wasn't quite right.
I don't
right,
know. Well, some people say so now. But, that could have been a stereotype, but then other things weren't. So, of course, it was very cleverly orchestrated. It was like a big performance with an orchestra, all the different elements coming in together.
And you gradually got to know what people's issues were, didn't you?
Yeah.
Over the... So you were curious about their issues throughout the play?
Mm.
Until the end when you actually discover, you know, what this thing between the professional woman and her girlfriend was. Mm. And,
So we've talked about character before, and we'll be talking about it again because it's so important. And some people say more important than plot, some people say as important, anyway, important. But there's so much you could talk about, and on the previous time we talked, it was about characters that interested us, I think, and we talked about ways of describing. But there's so much more that we need to talk about and will. So do you want to start and then I'll chip in?
Well, I was just thinking about how deep you have to go. You know, in order to come up with a character that's worthwhile, because for me, reading character is more important than plot. In that some books, when you get to know the characters, you could have nothing happen and I'd be happily reading about what they were doing.
Yeah.
Just because I wanted to spend time with those characters. But when you start, well, there are different ways of doing it, aren't there? And we have talked about a few of them before. But when I start off, I have to write into the character. Mm. So I have to get to know them gradually over a bit of time. Mm. And the only way that I can do that is through writing. They live in a little part of my brain, but there's so much else going on in there. I can only really make them come out when I sit down and write.
Mm.
And they do develop during that time. Or they reveal themselves to me, I should say. But I have to get to a certain point before I can actually write this story.
Do you see them?
Yes, I do see them. But I try not to describe them too much for a number of reasons. One is that I don't want, although I see them at the time, if I went away and then came back, I'm not sure I'd see them as clearly. Because you go away and you write, well, if I go away, it's because I'm writing something else. And then those characters move into that space in my head and I have to evict them before I can invite the other ones in, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So sometimes they've changed their eye colour in that time. So that's why I try not to give too much details about the way they look. That's one of the reasons. Mm. The other reason is so that people can imagine them themselves.
Yeah.
Which
is important, because sometimes when I've formed a picture of a character and then I've seen them on telly or film, it's not the same. It can quite jolt your idea of what you thought you'd understood.
Especially if they change them drastically.
Yeah. But you as a writer can change, and I know one of your characters, you did change quite a bit. You've worked on, I'm thinking of the male character in your story, main story.
Mm. Okay. Yes, yeah. He at first he was a secondary character. I'm not so clear on my secondary characters.
Mm.
Not initially, anyway. Not until they become more important. I wish there was a quicker way of doing it. Actually, for me, I wish there was a quicker way of doing it. But I've tried sitting down and writing, you know, filling in the charts and I've tried that, and it still doesn't work. I have that with plotting things as well. I can sit down and plot. I find it a bit frustrating, but I can do it. But then when it actually comes to writing, my writing just goes in a different direction. And I wouldn't say it wasn't useful at all, because it gives you ideas. It puts some ideas in your head, and even if you're not following it, you've not got that blank slate, yes. Which is always good. And my characters are just the same.
Just in case anybody hasn't done the exercise we're talking about, it's the kind of exercise where you ask questions of your character You think things, you can either pretend to be the character and say, how am I feeling today in your character's character? Or you can just go through a quizzy quiz thing saying, what height is that character? What's their favourite drink? You know, what's their favourite food? What do they think's funny or not funny? I've got umpteen of these questions. In fact, at a class recently I went to, attended, we were asked, and she called it interrogating your character, which I thought was a funny word to use in this context. But it was lots of things like, what was their childhood like? Are they carrying a secret? That was an interesting one. What pain might they be carrying? How they got on with their parents and siblings, those kinds of questions. But as you were saying, it's not everyone's thing to go through these in detail. But I do remember doing an exercise in our class that we met at, where we had to write about a room, and I wrote about one of my characters' bedrooms, which I hadn't. The exercise was to write about one of your character's childhood bedrooms, even if it didn't feature in the story, which it didn't in mine.
Yeah.
But I did find that useful. I thought it was a good exercise. Yeah. And then there was one about shoes. Do you remember that? We had to write about some shoes.
I think I wrote about boots, which is very me.
And I did ballet shoes, which isn't really surprising given my book. But this is the one I read about and I thought was interesting. Slight variation on that. It says, something in the room that you're in, like I'm in my room at this moment, that didn't belong to you originally, and pretend that you're a detective like Sherlock Holmes and look at it for layers of meaning. So look at the object as if you were a detective and try and work out things about it.
About the object or about the person?
About the object, and whether it's whole, whether it's a little bit chipped, or whether it's very typical of what they would have had in their house. Just going into that sort of detail as if you're a detective. I haven't tried it yet, but I thought, for instance, over there there's a bowl. See that little bowl?
Yeah.
Straight away I could tell you something. I was given it. It is cracked, and that's because it's Roman. So it's been around since Roman times. Which does tell you a bit about the person who gave it to me, because she loved things like that, that were Roman or even older.
Does that mean it's valuable?
No, because it's broken.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? This is an example of the exercise you could do, anybody who's listening. And it's just a bit different. And we did one a bit similar, which was, take your character and think of something they carry with them physically. Do you remember this? And you had 200 to 400 words you could describe this thing that they carry with them.
Did I do a sword? I don't remember this. Did
Maybe
I do?
You didn't do that.
Did class. I do the sword?
You might have done. I know what I did. I did my older character, and he carried around a memento of Princess Diana. So, you know, it's a good exercise. I think it's a bit more interesting to do that than to do just the what colour are their eyes, how tall are they.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You get a bit bored with that, don't you? Yeah. Well, I do, yeah. No, I don't, yeah. I could do with, at some stage, writing. You know when you're writing a series, which I am?
Yeah.
Of having like a character Bible with all the details in, so that you can remind yourself.
Yeah.
But again, it sounds like so boring to actually
do.
Well,
I know, but it is a bit important, because one minute you might have said that the character's mother died, and then you might have forgotten that their mother died.
I also,
after a whole book's length, you might, if they're not a significant part of the story, you can forget things like that, can't you? Or whether they had a sibling or not.
Yeah. But I also think having a physical hard copy would be useful.
Yes.
You know, because then you can flick through it, and while you're on the computer writing whatever you're writing, have it open.
I do think it's important to have a list to go back to, because otherwise you get tired of your own writing to the point that you don't notice.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't notice if you called a character by a different name in two different places. So, yeah, I think that is important.
Especially with autocorrect that's liable to change your character name without you even knowing. Yeah.
I've got a question for you.
Okay.
Do they have to be nice?
Oh, definitely.
The main character.
Definitely not. No. They don't... No, they don't have to be nice. But there has to be something about them that is either relatable or that you could admire.
Yes. Or at least understand.
Yeah.
How they got to that place. If it's a place of behaving quite nastily, how they got there.
Yeah. And... But if you've got a character that's doing nasty stuff, you've got to... You can't wait to find out why they're like that, especially if you don't find out until the end of the book. There's got to be something else, hasn't there, that draws you in.
And what could that be, do you think?
Oh, special. A lot of I find it hard to write characters that don't have, like, a special skill or a talent or a power and make them interesting enough to draw someone in.
Yeah.
I've tried that a little bit, but I always end up giving them something. do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's interesting, but because it's easier for you to do that because you're in the realms of not exactly magical, but they are slightly beyond what average human being could do.
Do you know when I wrote that short story, though, and the main character, she was human, so no special powers, human, in a world where there's basically magic and werewolves and what have you. And I tried really to make her very human, but she was also very clever and very brave and...
Yes.
So she still ended up having these, she wasn't very ordinary. She still ended up having these kind of skills that made her special. And I think that's subconsciously me trying to make the reader connect with them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So that is one way, they have a special skill or interest that you can share. Or you can relate to.
Or they've overcome such adversity.
Yeah.
I'm writing about... The one that I'm writing about at the moment, she's got a disability. So she was born with a deformed foot. But it's the fact that she survived in a world where that's... The perfection... And capability, so the ability to be worthwhile, is the top priorities, and she's managed to survive with her kind of deformity, and so that in itself makes her special.
So it could be a crisis, it could be a series of challenges, and it could be a special ability or skill. I was thinking of one that Laura told us about, or we read, and I've written it somewhere, but it's the one, it's quite spooky, it's about a guy who murders his mother. Do you remember that one? Spider by Patrick McGrath. Do you remember Spider?
Vaguely, but I couldn't tell you where.
It's interesting, you can only vaguely remember it.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, how do you have a main character who's as unpleasant as that?
Did she deserve murdering?
Yes, partly. It built up to quite a disturbing behaviour by her that had made him how he was. But also, I think you did feel that he was quite challenged in many ways anyway, emotionally, certainly. And sometimes you do get characters like that, like the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not exactly a nice character, is she? She does have a special power, like you said.
Yeah.
She's brilliant with computers, a hacker. So...
She's a survivor as well.
She's not a warm person, is she?
No.
So I think she's a good example to think about. And this is by Stieg Larsson, the book Girl with the dragon tattoo.
But I've got a question for you now. Do you think if you hadn't had him, I don't know his name, no, as the counterpoint, do you think that you would have engaged with...
Well, I thought that very thing, and I had the same issue of not being able to remember the name. But I do think... Because actually, you could say he's the protagonist, although she's named in the title of the book, so that makes it interesting, doesn't it? But who would you think was the main character, him or her?
Because he was the opposite of her in many ways, wasn't he? A bit not so capable... nice.
Yes, a bit bumbling.
Yeah.
And rather messy sort of private life.
Yes.
But I think she's interesting. And what I think makes you follow her and want her to do well and not be killed is because you know she's been badly hurt in the past by various people, but abused, really, by someone who was in a position of power with her. So you do... warmed her in that way, but she's not a warm character in herself. So I'm
thinking of Mark Lawrence as well. Prince of Fools. That's one of the books. It's a trilogy, and the protagonist in it is really nasty. He's quite young, a teenager. And he's kind of leading this band of cutthroats and what have you. And he's the nastiest of them all. But he's also incredibly intelligent. And, you know, through the series of books, you find out what a horrendous past he's got. And you find out why he's like he is and why he does these nasty things. And he also does things that redeem him as well in the reader's eyes. And it just makes quite a complex character that the more you read, the more you kind of engage with him. But initially, I think it's his clever... You're reading it because he's cocky, he's clever, he gets away with it. And you kind of want him to.
So would you think from the writer's point of view then, what they've done there is to do some very good dialogue? So you're hearing his voice.
Yeah, absolutely good dialogue.
Because if you're not going to paint a picture visually of somebody, and I might read that example in a minute, a description, then you kind of need to hear their voice very quickly. So what you're saying is you heard that.
Yes, and the other thing is that the antagonist, not the antagonist, because it wasn't just the antagonist, it was the other characters around him were even nastier. So that was the other thing.
Yeah.
That you kind of like, they deserved it.
But it can be dangerous to write a book where none of the characters are likeable, because you can just lose interest.
I generally don't. The character's so important to me that I have picked up books and put them down because I can't engage with them, or don't engage with them straight away.
Yeah.
And of course you've got your character arc, where your character at the beginning of the book is a different person to at the end of the book. So sometimes I try and read on thinking I need to be patient, because it might be that I start to like them partway through.
So that's the idea, where your character needs to have some sort of development in the course of the book. So they either need to learn something new or change in some way. Something has to happen. That's the arc you mean, isn't it?
Yes. And when I say that I don't plan character, I do try and look at that. I try and look at their motivation and their internal motivation and their external motivation. So what's really driving them versus what they think is driving them. And sometimes there needs to be a conflict between those two things so that you get that tension and you get all the underlying meaning. That makes people quite interesting. Like real people are, aren't they? Real people don't always... What is it? What they want is different to what they need.
Mm.
So yeah. At the end, are they going to get what they want or what they need?
Like the Rolling Stones song. Can't always get what you want. But you can get what you need.
Satisfaction.
I might read this character description and then we'll come back to that point about motivation, because I think we need to come back to that. It's so important.
We probably need to do a whole episode on motivation.
Perhaps we do. But one quick question you can ask of your character for each character is, what do they want?
Mm.
And then you can go in deeper, like you said. I'm going to read a little piece out of Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson. And I'm reading it because, as I hope you'll see, it's a very quick way of introducing a character. I remember him as if it were yesterday, as he came plodding to the inn door, his sea chest following behind him in a handbarrow, a tall, strong, heavy, nut-brown man, his tarry pigtail falling over the shoulders of his soiled blue coat, his hands ragged and scarred with black, broken nails, and the sabre cut across one cheek a dirty, livid white. I remember him looking round the cove and whistling to himself as he did so, and then breaking out in that old sea song that he sang so often afterwards. 15 men on the dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum.
Yes, that does give you an immediate visual.
Yeah. So then, that is perhaps a little out of fashion, that type of description, where it's quite intense, actual description of the man. As we were talking about earlier, now I think a lot of writers prefer to let the reader form their idea of that.
I know, but you can't really argue with that, can you? Because it's done so well.
It is done really well.
But it has to be done that well, doesn't it? To keep your attention now. Yes. I think that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And it is quite short, given that it's such a good description. It is quite short. Because if you go on for page after page describing somebody and not getting into the story, you will probably lose your reader.
I'll tell you, books, modern books that do that, is romance books.
Mm.
They usually have a really full description of the main woman character, yes, and the main man character, because a lot of it is, and I suppose I am talking about a stereotype here. Well, I don't know that it's a stereotype, it's more of a trope, isn't it?
Is that because they're attracted to each other, so you've got to show what they're attracted to?
I think it's about the fantasy of being her, the woman, the main character in the book, because it is primarily read by women, isn't it?
Yeah.
Romance. Well, that women admit to reading it anyway. So I think the man has to be attractive in some way. And I have read romance books where he isn't classically attractive, but there's far more where he is, you know, muscular, chested, big, and all those.
Mm.
And I think they are more tropes than stereotypes. Mm. But yeah, it's about that fantasy element of when you're reading, you become the main character. So the romance of being in that situation and being the lucky woman.
Yeah.
But they do often have a lot of detail about how both characters look.
I'm just thinking, so obviously some of the things about character then, just to recap, are that you can talk about their appearance, you can hear their voice, and you can think about their behaviour, or what you were talking about, the motivation underneath the obvious motivation. So the obvious motivation might be to succeed at something, and then you might find out that they're really trying to forget something or prove something. Is that the kind of thing you mean?
Yeah. Mm.
And then you might want to do it through showing special strengths, like you said, or for that matter, weaknesses, special flaws or weaknesses or mistakes in their past. And what else did I think? Oh, well, setting the place can help us know the character, can't they? Like the inn here is the setting, and he's a man who you'd expect to find in that kind of setting. And in the Sky's Edge play that we saw, the setting was important for understanding the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And what else? Preferences I've put. So preferences like what they like to read, do, eat, people they might like.
Yeah, I was just thinking how layered that is.
Mm.
So how you have to slowly uncover those things as you read the novel.
Mm.
And how it's far more important, that deep motivation, how that drives everything that they do and make the decisions that they make.
That they might not even know.
Yeah, they might not even know.
Yeah.
And that's the only bit I do beforehand, is think about that.
Mm.
Because I always have to start with a character. And then the story just comes. Writes and rewrites and edits and... yes.
So for the deeper motivation, well, I partly suggested some ideas of what it could be, but I just want to make sure I really understand it. If it was a friend of ours...
Mm.
And not a character we've made up.
Yeah.
Their outward motivation could be to be the best cross-country skier ever.
Yeah.
And then what would be the underneath thing?
To prove to themselves that they're worth something.
Mm.
That sort of thing. So perhaps she's one of... six children, and there was never any time for her. Mm. And she's a middle child, and she always got forgotten about, overlooked, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
which gives her an underlying feeling of worthlessness. So, but one thing she's good at is cross country skiing. Yeah. So, yeah, you see where I'm going with
it. I do now. Yeah. So what else? Is there anything else you wanted to
cover? Oh, I've got loads, but I'm just thinking that maybe we ought to do a part two on character.
Well, I'm sure we will, because I think we'll do an ongoing coming back to and back to and back to character, don't you?
Yeah.
So shall we stop there?
I think we shall.
Goodbye, and thank you for listening.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you, and if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.